Okay, you ready?
Yep. I'm all set.
Okay. Appreciate that. Director Mueller, the FCIC was a...
Can I just say, it's actually pronounced Mueller.
Oh, Mueller. I'm terribly sorry.
That's okay. Not a problem.
I appreciate that. Director Mueller, the FCIC was established by the Fraud Enforcement and Recovery Act of 2002 and signed into law by President Obama last year. It is a bipartisan commission consisting of 10 commissioners who are charged with examining the causes of the financial crisis and the collapse or near collapse of major domestic financial institutions. Additionally, the commission is charged with composing a report of findings to the President and Congress, which we anticipate will be made public in January of 2011. A few housekeeping items. If the question is unclear, please ask us to clarify, and of course we will. Please respond audibly since we are tape recording, as are you. And the tape recorder is unable to pick up gestures or nods.
Yeah.
And Director Mueller, this is Chris Seifer. As I talked to your staff earlier today, we may want to use a portion of this interview in our report that we're in the process of preparing. And if so, we'll certainly be in contact with you about any portions of the interview we would want to use before including them in the book. So with that, why don't we get started on the substance? Go ahead, Donna.
During your tenure as Bureau Director, when did you first realize that mortgage fraud might be becoming a more systemic problem in the United States?
I can't put really a particular time or a day on it. Quite obviously, I'm familiar with the testimony back in 2004 from Chris Squire, and so I probably was aware some time back in 2004 that was an issue that we were taking account of.
Did you discuss Assistant Director Swecker's warnings with him?
I can't recall back then.
Do you know if you discussed the various warnings prior to Mr. Swecker's testimony?
You're asking me to go back 6 years, and I don't have any recollection 6 years ago of particular conversations I might have had on it.
Director Mueller. Of course, timing is everything. You become director a week before the 9/11 attacks, and we've seen data that after that, that about 500 agents were moved out of the white collar crime enforcement and into terrorism related activities. Do you have any recollection just about those decisions that were made, the reasons why, and if over time any decisions were made about transferring additional resources into white-collar crime in general and mortgage fraud specifically?
Well, in the wake of September 11th, it became immediately apparent that we had to move operational agents to address counterterrorism as well as building up an intelligence capacity to stop future terrorist attacks. And part of that, what one had to do in the wake of September 11th is prioritize, and really prioritize, not just have a tier in which a special agent in charge could pull out a particular priority in a particular place in the country. And so we had to prioritize. I moved a total of 2,000 agents from the criminal programs over to national security. Almost 1,500 of those were out of the drug programs. About 500 were out of white collar, as I recall. But the decision we made then was we were going to focus on substantial white-collar criminal cases. We have 56 field offices, 400 resident agencies, and many of the white-collar criminal cases we had were relatively de minimis, and consequently we had to prioritize, and at that time and we did take, I'm not certain of the exact figures, but several hundred from what I would call the white-collar crime program, but the less important cases.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things we're just trying to get a handle on generally that I'm hoping you can speak to is that's certainly understandable in wake of the 9/11 attacks. And as we go through the decade of the 2000s, we see an explosion in the non-traditional mortgage type of loans, the riskier type of loans. We see a substantial increase in the number of suspicious activity reports that are being filed with FinCEN, and believe that even that huge explosion, you know, understates the actual number of mortgage fraud cases, because there's a lot of companies that don't have to file. There's a lot of companies that don't file even that do have to file. And we do see, at least initially from 01 going forward, the number of agents in white-collar crime being reduced. We then, of course, see Swecker's warnings in the September-October 2004 time frame. And I'm just sort of wondering if you can speak to how things changed, if at all, in terms of resource dedication to white-collar crime in general, mortgage fraud in particular, as we go through the decade of the 2000s?
Well, by putting what you said in context,
sure.
You had September 11th and the necessity thereafter to move the 2,000 agents from the criminal programs. You also had, in rather quick succession, the anthrax attacks and necessity for prioritizing weapons of mass destruction and initiating a division there. You also had the initiation of a cyber division because of the growth in the cyber arena. And at that time in the white-collar arena, you had Enron, HealthSouth, Quest, WorldCom, just to name a few off the top of my head, which were the principal white-collar criminal cases that we were dealing with in 2002, 2003, 2004. And during that period of time, to the extent that I had wished to replace any of those 2,000 agents on the criminal side of the house, there was not a great appetite in Congress to do that. To the contrary, throughout the beginning of this decade and until maybe a couple of years ago, the dialogue with Congress was, what do you need to prevent the future terrorist attacks? What do you need to prevent another anthrax attack? How have you developed into an intelligence organization that should be that organization within the United States responsible for developing intelligence to prevent such threats? And so in the context of that, the growth in mortgage fraud can be, I think, tracked beginning perhaps in 2004, a little bit before 2003, 2004, where the SARs are growing over the years. At the same time, internally, we put in place mechanisms to address that growth. We created the mortgage fraud program in 2004. We put into place the mortgage fraud classification in 2006. I can tell you in 2006, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, we requested additional resources from the White Collar Criminal Program. We got some resources, but did not get what we had requested. And so as I look at our growth over the that past decade, I understand that you're looking at it from the perspective of the mortgage fraud crisis overall, and in particular tracking mortgage frauds across the United States. But our look at it was also in the context of other priorities that we had, and in particular the focus of Congress in terms of allocating resources, which was not in any way directed to the criminal programs, whether it be white-collar or gangs or organized crime. So that's just a brief overview of from my perspective of what we were faced with during that period of time.
But we have heard that a number of states were expressing concerns about the growth of mortgage fraud. And in fact, Florida was beginning to put a lot of additional resources into it. And there was a 49-state settlement reached in the AmeriQuest case with very widespread reports all over the country of extensive mortgage fraud. Did you consider investigating AmeriQuest?
I'm not familiar with that settlement. I don't know whether we, at whatever period of time it occurred, that we focused on that particular case. I do believe that as we saw our cases increase from 2004, 2006, 2007, maybe a couple hundred a year, we were, as Chris Weckert indicated, and the changes we made afterwards were responding to what we saw as an increase in mortgage fraud cases. But I will tell you that I have had AUSAs tell me that while they could find these cases, the market was still going up. Everybody assumed that they would bail out of these cases because the market would be continuously going up. And in some cases, we had problems both investigating and prosecuting because of the failure of being able to prove a loss. And so while the market was going up, we saw an increase of these mortgage fraud cases by persons who wanted to double or triple their returns on their investments in properties. But we did not anticipate, and I'm not sure anybody could have anticipated, the other side of that, which was the bundling and packaging of mortgages into investment vehicles or investments, which I do think was part of, and in fact a major contributor to what we only found happened 2008, 2009 when the market turned.
So in other words, then, to the best of your recollection, you don't remember any legislator asking for any additional resources for investigating mortgage fraud in their states?
I'm not going to go that far. I'm not going to say there wasn't a senator or somebody from the other side who didn't ask and didn't focus on mortgage fraud, but I can tell you that we are still down maybe 1,600 agents from the criminal side that have not been replaced since 2001.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I wanted to follow up on one of the points you made earlier in terms of asking for more resources. I think you said back in the 04, 05, 06 timeframe, you maybe got some, but not everything you asked for. A couple of points on that. A couple of questions on that. One, were there, disagreements or discussions within the FBI on whether or not more resources were necessary to combat mortgage fraud, or was it pretty much agreed that there were more necessary? And then two, in terms of the additional resources that you folks were seeking and were turned down, can you, provide us a little more color or detail on the reasons it was turned down, who said what, et cetera, just so we have a better idea?
Sure, I can tell you our budget process is I go to every one of the divisions. I set general priorities, go to every one of the divisions and say, what are your priorities and how they fit into the overarching priorities of the organization? And then I make a decision amongst the priorities, and white-collar crime was one of those priorities in which from 2000 and at least 2005, we requested additional resources, got some but not what we requested. And our budget process is we go from the FBI to Justice, who looks at our requests, decides what they want to forward to OMB. OMB looks at it in the context of the overarching budget, and then OMB contributes to the President's budget, which goes up on the Hill, and then you know what happens thereafter. And so it's hard to track where in any particular budget cycle the request was made and who batted it down when it goes forward. I can tell you we made requests in 2005, beginning in 2005, in white-collar crime, and some of the requests were responded to in the later years, but during, say, 2005, 2008, we didn't get what we requested.
And then what about generally within the FBI? Was it a general consensus? I mean, obviously you asked for more resource and didn't get what you asked for, at least not all of it. But were there any, contrarian voices in the FBI that said, look, we don't need any more resources on white-collar crime, mortgage fraud. What we need, for example, is more resources to combat terrorism and cybercrime and anthrax threats and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, there are always, in an organization like this with so many programs, there are always a lot of voices. Right. Everybody, my person to handle gangs, for instance, saying gangs are MS-13, 18th Street gangs in California are creating havoc. I had senators and congressmen from California, and that was their number one issue for several years in there. I'll have certainly counterterrorism, counterintelligence. One of our priorities is counterterrorism, but another priority is counterintelligence. You saw the arrest of the 11 or 12 Russians maybe 6 months ago, or cases that we've been handling. Counterintelligence will come at you and say, we got Russians, we got Chinese, we got others, we need the resources, and I have to sort it out and prioritize. In my mind, in white-collar crime, we started with the NROT type of case in 2002, 2003, 2004, which we had to staff up, and which was a huge white-collar challenge for us. And as that diminished, we saw the mortgage fraud number of cases rise, and so that became increasingly more of a priority during the budget process.
If I can expand Chris's question, Director, a little beyond the Bureau, did you see eye to eye with Attorney General Gonzalez regarding the need for more mortgage resources?
I tell you, there's so many, when we go into budget discussions, so many particular areas. I can tell you, I can't tell you specific discussions. I can tell you that generally, from September 11th, 2001, to today's date, the most important thing on the mind of the Attorney General, those in Congress, has been preventing another terrorist attack. And that has driven, I would say, the budget process for most of the past decade since September 11th. And to the extent that we have gotten resources over that period of time, over the Marshal Service, over ATF, over DEA, over other agencies, it is because of our role in addressing the threat of another terrorist attack. Yes, we have gotten some resources in the cyber arena. Yes, we've gotten some resources in the white-collar criminal arena, particularly in the last couple of years, after we and others recognized the extent of the mortgage fraud process. But I mean, really, to the extent that there were discussions that were driven and have been driven by the necessity of us developing an intelligence capacity in order to be able to respond to the terrorist threat.
In February of 2005, you testified before the Senate Committee on Intelligence and specifically addressed the increase in mortgage fraud and the importance of that and the need for resources. Do you recall in 2005, specifically going to Attorney General Gonzalez and saying something to the order of course, we have many priorities, but we really do need to increase the resources here.
I can't remember whether I had such a conversation. I think we got the minimum result in 2005. I'm not certain my plea was all that effective.
You went back in 2006, and any time in that period, 2005
yes.
or 2006, either Attorney General Gonzalez or the executive branch, did you take the appeal a little further, not having gotten the resources that you requested?
I'm not certain whether I appealed in any particular year. There's a process where the budgets go over to OMB, they come back to Justice, and then come back to us, and I have an opportunity to appeal. I may well have, in one or more of those years, appealed for additional white-collar resources that would encompass mortgage fraud. I just off the top of my head, I can't remember.
So, Director Mueller, given the focus on terrorism-related events from 9/11 forward, maybe you can talk to a little about how perhaps the FBI worked with or changed how it worked with the banking regulators, the Fed, the OCC, the OTS, the FDIC for insured institutions, and then I suppose with state attorney generals and other, you know, perhaps State Department of corporations for, you know, the mortgage companies that weren't regulated by federal financial regulators. Could you speak to that and if there's any change in the way you dealt with those folks in your efforts to combat mortgage fraud?
Well, I'd have to get back to you on a specific intersection with the head of a criminal division with a particular groups, whether it be state attorneys general or the industry. I know our head of criminal has a pretty good relationship with a number of those entities, meets with them, speaks with them, and the like. I can tell you that beginning in 2006, we set up the mortgage fraud classification, and as we grew as a threat-based agency, that is, identifying threats and trying to get ahead of threats, utilizing intelligence to do that, we changed our approach in terms of addressing something like the mortgage fraud crisis. And that means gathering intelligence as to what is happening, where it is happening, and how we can best allocate our resources to address it. And that would encompass putting together task forces or working groups around the country where there were specific spikes in mortgage fraud activity. And beginning back in 2006, going to 2007, particularly in 2008, 2009, those have expanded substantially, as has our focus on large-scale mortgage fraud cases that will have a substantial impact, and by that I mean deterrent effect, on others committing the same type of fraud.
Mm-hmm. But generally, I mean, because it sounds like from what you're telling us that, you know, your bosses were saying, look, the focus needs to be on terrorism, and as you've said, you know, you have, at least in relative terms, if not absolute terms, less resources for white-collar crime on mortgage fraud, and I'm wondering if there was an internal recognition of, look, given this reality, we need to rely more on the federal banking regulators and on the state enforcement agencies in this area to try to, you know, combat this growing problem, as we've seen in internal justice and FBI documents over the decade. Just generally, if you can speak to that without, you know, specifics of programs.
Well, I mean, we focused on concerted activities beginning back in 2004. We had Operation Continued Action, which had 150 indictments. I'm sure you've got this information. Operation Quick Flip, right, in 2005, 156 indictments. Malicious Mortgage, 2008, 406 indictments and the like. And those have been efforts that we have undertaken, but we've undertaken it with state and local law enforcement as well. We understand we have to leverage our capabilities. And consequently, I'm not certain we'd have to get to the number of working groups and task forces that we have around the country now that have grown up in the last 3 or 4, 5 years. One thing that I do believe is that our resources in mortgage fraud, we have allocated over the years additional resources to mortgage fraud in each year to reflect the growth in the mortgage fraud activity. But I am not going to tell you that that is adequate to what is out there. But we have taken additional resources and put them to mortgage fraud as we see the SARs going up, as we see the numbers of cases that have been referred to us increased.
On a similar notion, more than a few people, particularly state AGs and others, have complained to us about federal preemption and in particular, you know, the OCC and the OTS taking those positions, and of course, not that long ago, the United States Supreme Court upheld that. Do you recall having any discussions with any of the banking regulators about, one, federal preemption and whether it was the right way to go, or two, their efforts to crack down, there being the federal banking regulators, excuse me, on whether it's, you know, mortgage fraud, predatory lending, et cetera?
No, but I do know that I have been with each of our 56 field offices. When I sit down with them, I do it periodically to go over their priorities in each of our 56 divisions. One of the questions are always asked is, how are you triaging the mortgage fraud cases? In other words, what can you handle? If you cannot handle it, what are you doing to enlist the support of state and local law enforcement? Preemption is not preempting me to going out and saying, hey, look, we have to address this problem. We can handle a certain percentage of it, but state and local law enforcement also have a role to play. And I'm looking at it from the investigator's point of view. As I'm sure you're aware, you're an investigator yourself. The investigator's point of view, and I don't care who gets the credit. I don't care who pulls an oar in order to cover the full numbers of mortgage fraud cases that may be in a particular division.
Mm-hmm. Right. I wanted to follow up about your point about the SARS reporting and the growth of the SARS reports. Mr. Schwecker had told Congress that he wanted to see SARS reporting required also in non-depository institutions, you know, which were doing a lot of this in the early years, doing a lot of this non-traditional lending, and where there were numerous reports of fraud. And in fact, that just has never happened from 2004 till now. In fact, I think the Treasury Department is just now proposing that it on its own expand requirement of SARS reporting. Can you tell us why that never happened?
I don't know. I've been supportive of it for a number of years. And when queried, I would say yes, the more suspicious activity reports we can get, the better job we can do. And in the last 2 or 3 years, one of the focal points for us has been that the agencies who are involved in this process do a much better job of digital record keeping and mandated digital record keeping, so that when we come in and have to investigate a case, we have a record that is readily available, readily accessible, that will expedite our investigations, whether it be in mortgage fraud or other government fraud with the stimulus packages and the like. That is one of the things we've been pressing for a number of years.
One of the other things that's come up, and that's come up in some of our public testimony, is the discussion of institutions that did not, who were required to file SARS reports, but apparently did not. Have you given any thought to that? the fact that people are skirting around their FinCEN requirements?
We saw it before when the first when you had to report cash in excess of $10,000, a number of banks didn't do it, and ultimately had to prosecute one or two until it got done. I'm not familiar with the extent to which there are individual institutions out there that should be filing the SNRs and aren't.
Thank you.
By the way, Director Mueller, right?
Yes, sir.
I got it right. This is Bill Angelides again, and staff. I am going to have to, like I said, get off for this pre-existing commitment. I'm going to hear the full audio, Director.
Yes.
But I do want to say, at least in the half hour I've joined this, I appreciate the fact that your knowledge and your preparation, not to say that you prepare, but the fact that you're addressing these issues forthrightly. I really appreciate it.
Happy to do so.
So I will let you continue with our excellent professional staff, and I know we'll be mindful of your many duties as they try to wrap up this interview.
But I'm also mindful of your background in this arena, so you're far more knowledgeable than I am.
I don't think so. I think you're doing great. I learn every time I read and I have a chance to absorb public testimony as well as other testimonies. But thank you very, very much, and thank you for your service to the country.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Director Mueller.
Yes.
At some point in 2007, I know the FBI signed a memorandum early in the year with MBA to promote FBI's warnings on mortgage fraud, and there was some effort to work with the industry. Did you ever hold meetings or have conversations with the larger U.S. banks about the problem?
No.
Do you know if anyone in your staff did? The warnings and the like seem to have gone out directly at the loan origination and sort of on the community bank level. Do you know?
In the criminal division, we have everything from gangs to public corruption to white collar crime to or other aspects of white collar crime. I'd have to go to the section and see what has been done over a period of time.
Okay, but you have no recollection of efforts to reach out to the largest U.S. lenders?
No, I mean, it would be very unusual for me to reach out to a large grouping of entities, some of whom we may be investigating.
Fair enough. I noticed the effort was made with the MBA, and I just wondered if that went further. You talked a little bit with Chris about interagency coordination, and I noticed in your confirmation hearings that was something that you spoke about, the need and your desire to work more with other agencies.
Yes.
During your time as Bureau Director, have you been satisfied with the coordination and cooperation vis-a-vis mortgage fraud and mortgage-related fraud with the federal regulators, OCC, OTS, the Fed, and the SEC, to the extent that you've worked together on mortgage-related cases?
All I can tell you is that I have not received any complaints that I can recall about any of those entities not participating and cooperating to identify those whom we need to investigate and ultimately perhaps should be indicted.
Any surprises on your end that there weren't more or different referrals coming from OTS, OCC, the Fed during the crisis years?
I'm not certain whether those referrals would accurately represent the tsunami that was to hit us. All of us look back and say, what are the contributing factors? And I believe that from our perspective, we saw an increase in mortgage fraud cases that generally aligned with the increase in the housing market. And everybody wanted to make a killing at it. And as they were doing it, we had numerous and increasingly numbers of mortgage fraud cases. But then the factor, the triggering factor in my mind, is the fact that these mortgages were bundled, were packaged, and utilized as investment vehicles that drove the whole process well beyond what we could see when we are getting individual cases relating to mortgage fraud. And so I do believe that it was difficult for certainly us and perhaps others to foresee what was coming down the pike. In some sense, it was not much different than what we saw with the Enrons and the HealthSouth and WorldCom. There was a particular behavior that we were alerted to, we would investigate and prosecute. And consequently, that's what I thought we saw in terms of the mortgage fraud crisis. Yes, it was growing, but our anticipation back then was we will address these as cases across the country. And as we address them and put people behind bars, it will be a deterrent to that behavior in the future. We did not, I do not believe, foresee what would happen as a result of them being packaged as financial instruments.
So, Director Mueller, do you recall if there were any efforts with the FBI, whether alone or with the federal regulators, about simply trying to stop or prohibit certain types of loans that were being made? Of course, one of the things, you know, we've seen in the last year here and looking at the financial crisis was the growth of, you know, these loans with either low doc or no documentation or no down payment or, you know, a lot of the types of risk layer features that, you know, unfortunately tend to be common to a lot of loans that turned out to be fraudulent. Were there any efforts in that regard in terms of, you know, let's stop, let's prohibit, let's make illegal the liar loans and the other types of loans that, as they become to be known now anyway?
A couple of points on that. Many of these loans were out there when the market was going up. And consequently, those people who were involved in that kind of activity assumed that they would be covered down the road. And often, as I alluded to before, cases that we thought were good cases would not be good cases because the properties kept rising in terms of their value. What was the other part of your question? I'm sorry, I forgot the...
Just whether there was, and I hear you in terms of reacting to when, you know, you find out about these kinds of loans, and I'm asking more of sort of on preventative measures and whether there was ever any attempts to say, you know, look, we've now seen, as we see SARS growing and these types of loans being made more and more, and even if, you know, rising home prices are resulting in not a lot of losses and maybe, you know, preventing prosecutions because you need a loss amount, nevertheless, you know, do we want to talk to our federal banking regulator brethren and talk to them about prohibiting these kinds of loans to nip it in the bud, so to speak?
Okay, I got you. I apologize there. I think in later years, yes. And that's part attributable to the fact that we had a separate, we set up a separate classification that we could look at a universe of cases. But it also was about the point in time where we build up our intelligence capacity with forensic accountants and the like, principally to address counterterrorism, counterintelligence, and the other, but utilizing that same intelligence capacity to see if there were trends within that universe of cases that we have relating to mortgage fraud. And we have increasingly over the years put together what we call intelligence reports that would identify those trends and send them out to other offices as well as to financial institutions. So it was part of a reflection of, okay, this is a particular area. The mortgage fraud behaviors you see in Las Vegas are different than you see in Phoenix, that are different than you see in Tampa or Miami. And what do you see down there? And educating both our workforce as well as the financial community as to what kind of fraudulent schemes are out there and being passed on from city to city.
And in terms of those preventative measures, I'm going to try to tax your memory a bit now. You said in the latter years, can you place it any better than that in terms of when the FBI, whether alone or in conjunction with the banking regulators, were saying, look, we need to stop this specific kind of loan?
I don't know, it was as early as 2006, certainly 2007, 2008, as we grew up our intelligence capacity. We had 1,000, I think something like 1,000 intelligence analysts in 2001. We've hired maybe 1,500, additional 1,500 in 2000. So we have about 3,000 now. And of those, I've taken a number and put them in the criminal arena.
Mm-hmm. And were those...
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
that has made a difference in our ability to analyze the trends we see and not just react, investigate, and prosecute.
And in terms of looking at those trends, I guess I want to get an idea of, was it successful? I mean, were you guys able to, you know, get the banking regulators or on your own, you know, to tell folks that, look, here's trends we're seeing, but even beyond that, thou shalt not make this type of loan anymore? I mean, were you guys...
That's not really our role.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is not our role. I'm not a regulator. The impact we have is deterrence for, and the investigation is for investigate for illegal conduct. Quite clearly, if we see in the course of our investigation trends that should be brought to the attention of the regulators, then of course we pass it on. But it is not really my role or the Bureau's role to stand up and say, look, banking industry, you should not make this type of loan. Both because we don't have the expertise and we're basically a law enforcement slash national security entity.
Director Mueller, I guess I'd just like to follow up on that, and I can understand all the pressures that were on the agency all at the same time. But in fact, there was a press conference held at the FBI headquarters in December 2005 that talked about, you know, issued some pretty dire warnings about the extent of mortgage fraud and urged lenders to be taking a much more proactive role looking for fraudulent loans themselves. Do you remember that press conference?
Was I there?
I don't think you were. I was there.
I'm not certain if I was there.
I don't think you were there. Swepper was there and a number of other people. It was a multi-agency event.
It's not that, as I say, we can, as Chris Swecker did, as you, and perhaps we did at that press conference, we can advise others as the trends we see, but we are not in a position to tell the banking industry, this loan you grant this loan, you do not.
Yeah.
Certainly we can put out warnings that that you have to watch out for a certain predatory conduct, but beyond that, we don't have any particular role as a regulator who can make decisions or advise particular specific institutions as to what decisions they ought to be making.
Do you remember that press conference at all? Do you remember it occurring? Do you remember?
I don't. 9 years.
Okay. Director, you've spoken a lot about the disparity of resources and certainly we have a record that you requested more resources than you were given. But given the limited resources and as Kirsten said, the dire warnings that were coming out of the FBI as to the epidemic's proportion of the problem, did you ever?
Dire. I'm not certain I'd use the word dire. I mean, in retrospect, perhaps, but I'm not certain that, given what we knew at the time, and if you put yourself back in that time, with the evidence we have. Required warnings. Yes, we gave warnings, but I'm not certain I would utilize the word dire.
Okay, and I'm sorry for that, but let me just cut to the chase of my question.
Yeah.
Given that you had less resources than you would have liked to have had, you've told us to put toward mortgage fraud. Were there other alternatives considered, such as carving out some of the jurisdiction and relying more on the state enforcement capacity and even requesting that some of that jurisdiction be moved out of the FBI to somebody who had more resources?
Well, it's not a question of jurisdiction. We would retain jurisdiction. It's pushing cases out, and we certainly have done that. But I can tell you that over the years, particularly the last 3 or 4 years, when state and local governments have been hammered with budget crises, it has not been very... they have not jumped up to the plate. We're all pushed for resources now, including state and locals. That doesn't mean that we haven't had some success, and I think a substantial amount of success in our working groups and our task forces, where we join together and utilize resources from the federal entities, but also state and local entities.
And on the task force front, and I know that there were a variety of regional task forces in play, but in 2008, the Attorney General declined some calls for a national mortgage tax frost.
Mortgage task force.
Yes. Did you have a view on that, or do you today?
I think it was the appropriate decision because, as I mentioned before, much of the behavior that we were seeing, many of the cases we were seeing, were localized, and it was far more important to put into place a structure locally to address the particular activity as opposed to having it centralized in Washington. We followed in the savings and loan crisis back in 1991, 2, whatever, like sometime during that time frame. We did much the same thing. We had task forces around the country to address particular pockets of concern. And, for instance, with the mortgage fraud crisis, you have pockets of concern in places like Las Vegas or Phoenix or Tampa or Miami. But there are other places like in the Midwest, the Cleveland, Chicago, where you have some problems, but nothing like you see elsewhere. And consequently, the response needed to be tailored to the activity you saw in particular regions.
Some commentators have been critical of the relatively fewer criminal prosecutions of high-level executives that have come out of the current crisis. Compared to prosecutions coming out of the SNL crisis. Do you have a view on that?
Well, I think we can get you a number of the people in this who have made millions of dollars or responsible for millions, if not hundreds of millions of loss. It is a different type of activity than you saw in the savings and loan crisis, in the savings and loan crisis you saw corporate executives lining their own pockets without any restraint and constraints whatsoever, and with a loss to those who invested in their particular savings and loan. Likewise, when you look at the series of cases that we had 2002-2003, we had with WorldCom, Enron, and the like, we had substantial numbers of executives that went to jail for a good long time. I think you have seen a number to date, and you'll see more down the road. I don't think the book has been totally written or completed in terms of prosecutions of high-level individuals who may be responsible for mortgage fraud.
I guess one of the problems that we're dealing with here at the commission, as we look into all this and as we've gone around to collect testimony, including in our 4 field hearings around the country, is there's a widespread perception that a lot of high-ranking people got away with criminal activity this time that made them rich.
Well, I tell you, I think most of that anger is directed at Wall Street. I think most of that anger that you're talking about is that other aspect, that other part of the problem, that which was the bundling of these mortgages into financial instruments and the type of wealth that was made off of that particular activity. And it probably is combined with anger with regard to the role of Wall Street in this crisis.
I guess there's just been concern that there's been a lot of specific misrepresentations made in those bundled securities about the quality
I will tell you, we're continuing to investigate. And if you follow what we've done in terms of prosecutions, there have been a number out there, and you'll see some more down the road.
Any other questions? I think we've kind of covered it.
Okay.
Did you have anything else that you wanted to add, Director?
I do think that as you sort through this and try to identify those factors that would alert us to a crisis in the future. And I presume that's one of, if not the principal effort that you're making, is trying to identify what happened here so that we don't repeat the mistakes.
Yes.
I would focus on the necessity for having transparency in the financial arena, particularly so that when there are frauds, we have an ability to investigate swiftly and hold accountable those who are responsible for the frauds.
Yes.
And I do think, reflecting on what we had done over a period of time, I think we took the steps to address what we thought would be the mortgage fraud crisis in the future, not understanding that there was the back end that I've alluded to. And in the future, between the regulators and Congress and ourselves, the hope would be to have the telltales out there, the tripwire, so that we could know when we're going to face a comparable financial crisis in the future. And to the extent that we could have more resources to address it, they're always welcome.
So, Director Mueller, this is Chris. Let me just ask you one last question that maybe should have been our first question. But our statute, as I think Donna said in the beginning, has these 22 areas to look at. And not surprisingly, the very first cause that it tells us to look at is the role of fraud and abuse in the financial sector, including fraud and abuse towards consumers in the mortgage sector. Just generally, what is your opinion about the role of fraud and abuse, and in particular mortgage fraud, as a cause or a contributing cause to the financial crisis?
Well, I think you have to break that up.
Okay.
And you look at the fraud as being certainly a contributing factor, but fraud at the local level in terms of the mortgage frauds that you saw at the local levels around the country would be a contributing factor certainly. But the fraud that you see in terms of handling the instruments and representations or misrepresentations is equally, if not more, a contributor to what happened down the road. And by that I'm saying that something certainly when you have misrepresentations, that's something we should have been, or now we should be, have been, and will continue to investigate. But when you talk about securities fraud generally, I think it would be somewhat misleading to say that the individual case in Tampa, Miami, was the primary contributor to where we find ourselves today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm not saying we don't have a role. We have a role. We did have a role. We'll continue to have a role. But it's just one of the factors.
Okay.
And you've got how many other factors you're supposed to look at? 28 or something?
Yeah, something like that. It's a never-ending list. Director Mueller, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.